Eh bien, l'heure, c'est l'heure. Nous sommes quasiment à 17h30, donc comme promis il y a quelques instants, nous avons, je vous le disais, le plaisir, l'honneur d'accueillir pour la première fois, je crois, aux Assises du New Space, le directeur général de l'Agence spatiale européenne. Donc, je vous remercie d'accueillir sur scène Joseph Aschbacher, le docteur Joseph Aschbacher. Monsieur le directeur général.
So thank you very much for having me and for having the honor of closing this new space, which is a very interesting event. It's the first time I'm here, but I'm really happy to be here and give a few remarks. Geraldine Nasher, my director for commercialization, industry, and competitiveness, was explaining to me how important this meeting is. I just had the chance before to walk a bit through some of the stands and talk to some of you. And I have to say I was quite impressed, and I always like when there is new space companies, young people with all the energy and all the ideas and all the very good spirit to make a difference and to create new opportunities for Europe, for France, which is really important. And I really would like to acknowledge, but also to congratulate you for what you're doing and how I know how hard it is you're working and trying to make the best with the means we have in terms of funding, in terms of opportunities. But I see so much enthusiasm, so much energy. And some of you I know, some of the companies I know, some of them I don't, but I'm really happy to spend a couple of minutes with you. So in my remarks, I was, of course, being well briefed by Geraldine and her team to see a bit what are the main topics that I could address. And I'd like to focus on three points. One is a little bit on the European Space Agency to see how we can help you, because my job and our job as European Space Agency is to develop space industry in Europe and help you succeeding. This is what we want to do, to make boundary conditions and programs, funding mechanisms, to link with investors and institutional funding entities to help you getting access to funding, which of course for new space companies is always a big challenge. But also on the other side, obviously, to create technologies and opportunities through projects and programs where you can work on, where you can on one side mature your technologies and your services you want to sell on the market, and on the other side, grow. Grow, that means from a smaller company to a larger one, and to probably a very large one, to finally have some champions that will emerge out of this system. And this is certainly something at the core of ESA. So the first part, I have three parts of my intervention I would like to present to you. One is really ESA as an institution, but also looking a bit back on, as you know, we are now 50 years old. We have been created 50 years ago, but we are in constant transition, and we are constantly changing and adapting to new boundary conditions and new challenges. So I focus first a bit on the 50 years of ESA up to now, but also how we want to develop in the future, where we go, and always, as I said, to develop European programs of support to you. The second part really is about transformation of the space sector. So what happens, of course, in France, or what happens in Europe, what happens in the world, and how we make good use of what these boundary conditions are in order to develop, to provide you good boundary conditions to develop your businesses and your opportunities. And then the last part is really focusing on the challenges of this year, at least in the space sector in Europe, which is the ministerial conference of ESA, how we prepare, what we do, and how, again, this can be an opportunity for many of you. Let me start with the first one, which is the organization ESA, European Space Agency, how we developed and where we are today and where we go in the future. As you all know, I'm sure you have read it somewhere, we have been created in 1975 by 10 founding members. France is a founding member of ESA, and we have been put together based on two organizations that existed at that time. One was called ELDO, European Launcher Development Organization, and the other one was called ESRO, European Space Research Organizations. These have been two entities that have been working in the 60s, late 60s, until the early 70s, and then in 1975, with the creation of ESA, these organizations have been put together. There have been two personalities who have been really driving the creation of ESER. One was French, the other one was Italian. The French was Pierre Auger, and the Italian was Eduardo Amaldi. And these have been the forces behind the merging of these organizations and creating ESER. As you know, in these 50 years of existence, we are doing our job is, our mandate and our convention says that we develop space industry for Europe through European programs, making sure that the national contributions to these European programs are invested in the best possible way. And of course, France, being a major space power in the world, in Europe, has been a major driver of ESA over the last decades. And I really have to say, we are very grateful. If I say we, that means we as ESA. We are very grateful to France as a country, but also France as a force behind which we have been building up our capacity along the board and along many years of ESA. It really started with French programs. Ariane 1 was one of the reasons why we were building ESA, or our ancestors were building ESA. And actually, the reason why Ariane 1 was created and was built was something that is still valid today. At that time, this was in the 70s, in this case it was Germany and France who decided to develop a communication satellite, a telecommunication satellite called Symphony. And this satellite was needed to be launched. France, it was actually going back to an agreement between the heads of government of both countries, of course, Charles de Gaulle, well known in France, but with Konrad Adenauer in Germany, and both agreed that they want this telecommunication satellite as a major European or French-German project, but with many participations of other countries, and they want to build it together. Engineers have been building it, and then it needed to be launched. And when the launcher was, Europe did not have a launcher at this time, and they asked the United States to launch this Symphony 1 satellite for them. And this was turning out to be complicated because the United States did not agree to launch this communication satellite because the US was afraid that this is a commercial satellite taking away business from the United States, who have also had projects along this line. And after long discussions, negotiations, and a few hopeless nights and sleepless evenings and nights, it was agreed, or the United States agreed, that they will launch Symphony 1 under the condition that it is not used for commercial purposes, but for as an experiment, as a technology experiment. The originators of the project agreed to that. Symphony 1 was launched and eventually was used for technology experimentation and to develop know-how across Europe. But this was really the wake-up call for Europe, for France, Germany, and other countries to say, look, this cannot be that Europe develops technology and we cannot even launch our own satellites. We don't have a rocket, so therefore we need a European Space Agency that builds rockets. That means the Ariane 1 program was really created at this moment. And therefore, this was one of the very first projects, big projects of the European Space Agency to build a launcher for Europe and guarantee access to space for Europe. And you know very well, we have now the sixth generation of Ariane. We have had the maiden flight, inaugural flight last year, very successful. I can tell you this is technically quite a challenging rocket that we have built with a little bit of delay, I have to admit. I was, when I became Director General in 2021, this was my number one challenge on my desk to sort out and to get the launcher to the launch pad. At this time, there were still some people claiming that we don't need Ariane 6, we should just close it down and do something else and maybe find other ways of getting access to space. But it was crystal clear that we do need guaranteed access to space. Ariane 5 was already decided to be put out of service, and therefore we needed to go full steam towards the inaugural flight of Ariane 6. But this shows a little bit that Europe has built a European agency, European Space Agency, in order to create independence, autonomy, and strength for Europe in the space domain. And exactly the same argument today is very valid. I don't need to explain the geopolitical situation. I don't need to explain the situation in which we are right now. But the argument of independence, autonomy, is something that, again, is a very important element, a very important reason why we have, why we are building and putting together space programs. So, of course, over the last 50 years, we have done a lot as European Space Agency. We have built another rocket called Vega and Vega C, which is again an ESA-developed rocket, in this case with the involvement of France, but the lead of this program is with Italy. We have launched, we have developed 600 payloads. We have developed more than 100 satellites. And if I say 100 satellites, it's not small CubeSats or recurrent satellites of something. These are big satellites like Meteosat third generation, like Sentinel-1, like JUICE, like Euclid. So really, each of them are masterpieces of technology and engineering that we have been developing. We had 50 human spaceflight missions, that means astronaut missions, over the last 50 years. We have carried out 300 launches from French Guiana in our spaceport, what we call Europe Spaceport, over the last decades. But also, of course, we have been increasing our membership of ESA. We started with 10 and a budget of 360 million in 1975. Today we have 23 members. We got one more just at the beginning of this year, Slovenia, and a budget of 7.7 billion. Of course, the times are different. Space has much more applications, much more projects, and many more activities than it had at the beginning. But we gradually built up, starting with launches. Meteorology was one of the very first other large programs as well. Meteosat 1 was launched in 1977. Then Earth observation, navigation, telecommunication, space safety, astronaut flights, so that means exploration. So we gradually increased our activities over the years. And today, I think it's fair to say that ESA is a very capable, a very respected, a very good space agency. I put ourselves always next to NASA, JAXA, ISRO, and many other international partners. And it's really fair to say that we are doing very well, especially with the means that we have. That means the funding, if you compare the ESA funding, which, as I said, is 7.7 billion, with that, for example, of NASA. Also, the NASA budget is in a discussion right now, as you know, but still, even with their reduced budget, they have still a multiple of what we have in Europe. The NASA budget this year is 25 billion. Even if it is reduced by a couple of billions, it's still three times, four times as much as we have in Europe. Plus, in the US, we have a very strong investment in space through the Department of Defense, the Space Force, and similar activities. So for the fact that we are having much less funding, and I keep repeating that, because this is something that on one side, of course, shows that Europe is utilizing the money extremely well, very efficiently. On the other side, of course, it's a threat because we are exposed to a situation where we have many big companies, and especially on the commercial side, that are having much different funding sources at their availability and at their disposal. And therefore, of course, you can develop big companies like SpaceX or other ones simply because there's so much more public funding available. But also, and I see this now more and more also in the context of the geopolitical situation, that ESA is a respected, also an ambitious agency, but certainly known for its reliability, its strength technically, but also a very trusted partner globally. And I'm saying this because, as you know, in the United States, there's huge changes happening right now, also in, with regards to the role of NASA. So now more and more international space agencies from Japan, JAXA, from India, ISRO, the UAE, Canada, which already is a cooperating state of ESA, are coming to us and really would like to work with us on big projects, not small activities, but big projects. And we are quite sought after, if I may call it this way, at this point of time, as an international partner. What we also did, and this is something where I was also personally involved quite a lot, is building up a very strong cooperation relationship with the European Union, that means through the European Commission, having created some of the world's best programs for Earth observation and navigation together with the European Union. And there I really see that the roles of ESA and the European Commission are quite complementary. And sometimes people say it is not working well, it's difficult, it's complex. Yes, of course it's complex. But I always boil it down to the very simple basic ideas of what is the strength of ESA. What is the strength of the European Commission? And as long as we stick to these principles, it's very easy, because then we know what people need to do and how we need to work together. And as you say very well, if there is a will, there is a way. And I can certainly assure you there's a lot of will on the side of the European Space Agency, also on the European Commission, to work well together. Copernicus, as you all know, is a world-leading Earth observation program. I would dare to say it's the best Earth observation program in the world. There's nothing comparable in the United States, in Japan, in China. China is coming and building something up, but very much modeled on Copernicus, almost a copy of Copernicus in terms of satellites and missions. But really, there's nothing comparable to the Copernicus program in the world, with all the sensors, all the observations that are done from a different perspective, and with a big difference, with a services component that is going deep into the ecosystem of society and providing services for farmers, for forest people, for air traffic controllers, for ship routing companies, for iceberg watching entities, for medical people to monitor health, for disaster management people, and also for security and defense people more and more. So really there, Europe has done over decades a very good job in building up this program. Galileo, very similar, again built up together between the European Space Agency and the European Commission. Today, delivering the most precise, accurate, the most accurate navigation system signal worldwide, more accurate than GPS, which has been on the market 15 to 20 years before Europe decided to build up its Galileo system. So what does this say? If Europe puts its strength together, its excellence together, we can do it. We can even catch up from time lost in the past. That means coming later to a market and really develop some of the world's leading markets. And of course, this applies now very much so to the next big flagship that we are building up, IRIS². Yes, we are in delay. Yes, we are behind Starlink. Yes, we are not at the same level yet, but we will make it. We will build up a secure communication system that will be, again, among the world's best systems, and making sure that we provide what Europe needs in terms of technology and services, in this case, secure communication. There's a new one in the pipeline, and I'm sure you all have heard about it, called the European Resilience from Space. Again, something where we are building up a new capacity, possibly a future flagship of the size and nature of Copernicus and Galileo, but in this case, really geared towards defense and security. Security something, of course, being a need today. I don't need to explain why this is absolutely required. You just see the headlines of how much the NATO threshold has increased from 2% to now 5%, 3.5 plus 1.5%. It just shows that Europe needs to be stronger, need to defend itself, and space and defense obviously go hand in hand, as we know, through the European Commission's commissioner in charge of defense and space. So this is really what Europe and ESA has been building up over years. And of course, and here I speak to the small and medium-sized enterprises, you and the small and medium-sized enterprises, you are producing a lot of these components, of these elements that we require, also for big programs or for smaller technology developments, sometimes alone, in your own capacity as a company, sometimes in support of a big LSI, where they ask you and call on you to develop some components and technologies. And yes, this is a very complex ecosystem that we are building up over the years and that we really are very keen on developing. Just coming back to France and the role of France in the European Space Agency. France has always been the one pushing ESA and driving ESA. And there are many programs which have been originating from France. I took the example of Ariane 1 or Ariane. The Ariane program is a very typical one, but also Meteosat was a French national program in the early days and was Europeanized. Another example is, again, Galileo, which was having its origin in France. And then it was decided, of course, with all the Europeans that this should be a European program with the European Commission and ESA doing it together. Also Copernicus, I know it very well because I have been deeply involved in building it up. France had a SPOT program with SPOT satellites up to SPOT 5, SPOT 6, and SPOT 7. And these satellites, of course, in this case, only the optical domain, but they have been the ones in the optical domain from the 80s, mid-80s until the 90s and 2000s, when then it was decided again, instigated and supported and really would say dreamt up by France, together with, of course, all the other countries, that we need a European system, a European program, which is an Earth observation program, not only in the optical domain, but also in radar, also in infrared, also atmospheric chemistry, and many other parameters we are measuring, in order to have a good view of our planet from all angles, the atmosphere, the oceans, the land surfaces, the polar regions, where we have different sensors doing that. And again, France was a driving force in building it up over the last decades. And I really should say thank you to France for doing that. And this is, of course, decisions in the government that are the decisions made to participate in these programs, but also French industry, because you have been the ones who make it happen. What we do as ESA, we define the programs, we put them on the table for subscriptions. We are in this phase right now, the ministerial, but then it is, and once the money is provided by the governments, it is you, industry, who are implementing and developing all the hardware and all the elements to make it work and to make it happen. Of course, we set the frame, we make the IDDs, you apply, you are selected or not selected, but at the end, it is really industry that builds up all our programs. 85% of all the funding we get goes back to industry at large through a competitive process. Some of you may not know that ESA actually has three establishments or three centers or three places in France. Of course, our headquarters is in Paris, as you know. We have also a large office, headquarter, or part of a headquarter in Dominil, where we have our launcher directorate, which is working and co-located with CNES. And we have French Guiana, which is our European Space Board, where we are, of course, having quite a number of people there and very large activities. And we have a few people also in Toulouse working on some of the projects in navigation in particular. So this is really the ESA way of how we work, but really to underline that France has really been a driving force in ESA for decades, and this is something when I meet with the political establishment in France, I said, look, this is something I really would like to see, a very strong France driving us, defining us, telling us where to go, not a France that complains about G-return and all the other things that are, of course, also on the table and we need to look into and we are doing, but really a France that comes with bold ideas that Europe needs to do this, and Europe needs to build up programs in exploration, in Earth observation, in communication, in many other domains, and really be a champion in moving us forward. But here I come a bit to the second point, which I want to address, and I mentioned G-return, which is the transformation. Transformation of space, and you all know it very well because you are working in space since a couple of years. You see what happens outside, you see what happens in the United States, you see what happens in Japan, you see what happens in China and other countries. Space is in a complete phase of revolution. I would almost say in a complete paradigm shift of how space is done today compared to 10, 20 years ago. And this is something where me as ESA, we are also changing very drastically and very rapidly. And we are really changing the way how we work. On one side, yes, G-return, we have been making good progress in changing, adapting G-return to modern needs. Some of you, or maybe not all of you may know that about half of our budget is not having any G-return constraints. Some of it where we have weighting factors, some of it where we don't apply G-return by definition, some of it that comes from third parties. So we have actually a variety and a flexibility in our system that we are obviously working on this. But even within the G-return context, we have been introducing something called fair contribution, that we run the competition, and then at the end of the competition, the contributions are coming by the member states according to the result of it, which is not predefined, but which comes at the very end. And I think this is something that shows also that we are constantly evolving, constantly changing, adapting to new challenges and new situations, as we have done over the last 50 years, and as we keep doing. And this is something that is very dear to me personally, transformation of ESA, making sure that ESA as an organization is not old-fashioned, outdated, slow, and bureaucratic, but ESA runs like a business, runs like a company, because we are interacting with companies, that we are fast, that we are dynamic, that we are fit for the future, and this is something where I put a lot of emphasis myself into making this work and making this happen, to the detriment of some of my people, because things are going very fast and very dynamic. But this is exactly what we need to do in order to make sure that we serve you, that we help your companies grow, because I repeat what I said at the beginning, my job, our job as ESA is to of course, prepare programs and activities where you can bid for and you can become, you can develop your technology and get money and develop your business. But my job ultimately is to develop a strong, healthy space ecosystem for Europe that you can have, that you can grow, that you can develop your space services, your space technologies that ultimately will serve our users across the board. Talking of transformation, we have done something that has never been done before. Just about a year ago, we introduced something called IPMA, Independent Project Management Authority, which is a function within ESA attached to the Inspector General, which is an authority to avoid what we call conspiracy of optimism. In the past, we have, and I take some of the blame myself because I've been in ESA many years and I've been in charge of Copernicus, I've been a director in Earth Observation. We have typically developed a program proposal, put on the table, but we knew when we put it on the table that this is over-optimistic. Optimistic in terms of budget and in terms of schedule. So in other words, we wanted to sell this program to the member states so that they keep it on the table and then take it off. Of course, technically, I have to say our programs are all outstanding. There's never been any question that the technology and the programs we develop are not state-of-the-art technology. This has never been a debate. But where we had weaknesses, and I am saying this very openly, is that some of the programs have been too optimistic in terms of timing, that we said we launch in 5 years, and we knew at the time of defining it that it's not possible in 5 years, but it takes 6 or 7 years to launch. And we knew that this would not cost 500 million, but probably at the end 600 or 700 million, that this is too over-optimistic in the planning. I'm stopping this, and we have put this mechanism in place to avoid exactly this conspiracy of optimism, that what we put on the table is solid. It's solid, obviously, from a technology point of view and the risk assessment that we are doing with the program, so that we know that this is state-of-the-art technology and something that really pushes the envelope. But also, and this, as I said before, is the first time, at least to my knowledge in ESA, that we have a system in place to really look very seriously into avoiding this conspiracy of optimism, that they are solid in terms of budget estimates and time estimates, that means schedule, and therefore we are not over-optimistic and therefore run into problems later on in the process. There will still be, and this is always in space technology, there will still be problems coming up along the way, but at least we should start from the right foot on the right, with the right boundary conditions, so that if there are technical problems coming up, yes, we have to address them. They will cause delays, they will cause extra costs. This will still happen, but in a much smaller scale with a much smaller margin and much better organized and managed. We are also decreasing time to contract. We have managed to almost reach a 50% reduction. That means being double as fast compared to the past. We had a time to contract in the past of some 8 months, 8 point something months. Now we are going down to half of it, 4 point something months. And this is great, because we see, especially with small and medium-sized enterprises, that we need to be faster, and we need to really make sure that we are interacting with you in a much faster way. That means between the time that we start a procurement action in ESA, we go through opening a tender, preparing, of course, the tender documentation. We publish the tender, you apply, you submit proposals to us, we evaluate them, and then we sign a contract. This time is reduced by about 50%. The same is for time to hire. We have managed in the last year and a half to reduce the time to hire again by 50%, which means that we are double as fast in getting new people on board, and of course I'm very keen on getting young, fresh blood, fresh ideas on board we are doing. So as you see, we are having a long list of transformation items that we are looking into, and this is by far not the end of it. We will look into the way how we issue our documentation for contracts, how we run reviews in the projects, so that we are constantly trying to be faster. I know we are not yet perfect, by no means, but certainly something I can assure you, I'm putting a lot of attention to it with my team, Geraldine and the directors and all the management in ESA. Let me come to the third part of my closing remarks, which is the strategy 2040 and the preparation of the ministerial at the end of this year. As I mentioned, ESA is 50 years old. We have now, this year, published a strategy 2040, which is really, for the first time, a long-term strategy that goes beyond a mandate of a director general. When I became director general, I published an agenda 2025. Some of you may have seen it or read it. My predecessors also had agendas, so Jean-Jacques Trudon had agendas for 2007, 2011, I still remember them very well, so, but always linked to the mandate of a director general, that means 4 years, which is the mandate. My mandate started in 21, therefore I published an agenda 2025. When my mandate was extended early this year, I did not publish an Agenda 29, but I decided to make it a longer-term vision, which is not my document anymore, but a document I developed with member states together. It took us a year and a half to develop and write this document, but it's very solid and has really two advantages. It's not linked to one DG. It is much longer term, but also it is much wider, much more solid, because member states have, we have developed this with the member states and not only the DG, who happened to be DG at a certain period of time, which I think is quite important. So this strategy 2040, it's really worth reading it. We have different versions, a long version for details, a shorter version, more for executives or for politicians or the general public, but it focuses on 5 goals. Number one, protecting our planet and climate. And you can imagine what this all includes in terms of programs. Number two, explore and discover. This is science, space science on one side, JUICE, Gaia, these type of missions, but also explore, obviously, our solar system, exploration with astronauts, low Earth orbit space station activities, Moon and Mars belong also to this activity. Number three, and this is actually, I'm not saying new, but certainly new in terms of focus, strengthen European autonomy and resilience. And this is exactly the answer of ESA to today's geopolitical situation, that we want to increase our autonomy, our independence in terms of technology, and therefore make sure that we develop technology that Europe needs for its own sake, for its own purpose. Like Galileo, where we have a navigation system that would have existed, GPS in the past, but we need a European autonomy to do that. IRIS² is another example, ERS is another example where we're working in this direction. The fourth point, or the fourth goal, is boost growth and competitiveness. And this is exactly what we are talking here with you, with the new space companies. Growth and competitiveness is at the core of ESA. It's one of our priorities. Again, Geraldine is in charge of this pillar and these activities, and I really should say a big thank you, Geraldine, in front of all your colleagues here in France, but what you have built up over the last year, 2 years, I should say, or 3 years, is quite remarkable, really from investor networks to organizing the community, to having projects scale up, being the example which is now transformed into a new, much larger project in the future at this ministerial, and something that we take very serious, has been a priority in Agenda 2025 and will be a priority in Agenda or in Strategy 2040 in the future. And the last goal is inspire Europe. Inspiration is something that space is good at, but it's also very important that we do inspire through our activities, through our data, through our measurements, our community, young and old, and I'm probably one of the older ones, and I'm inspired every single day by what we do, and I think this is also part of what we have to do. That means we have to attract talents, of course, within Europe, to make sure that people come into the space business, but also from outside Europe, because I would like to have an ESA, a Europe where we have such interesting programs that people come from Pakistan, from India, or even the United States to us, and because simply we have cool programs they want to participate with and they want to be part of these programs. I've mentioned that the shift has been, and we had a very long debate over the last year on how far ESA can work on security and defense. And I use the word defense very deliberately because this is something where also the European Commission is working on defense and space through the Commissioner, Mr. Kubilius. First, as I said, we have very good relations. We established extremely strong and tight relations with the Commissioner on this security and defense. He has asked us to develop a system, what the Commission calls Earth Observation Government Services. We call it European Resilience from Space. It's exactly the same, but different names in the different institutions. But the goal is to develop a very high resolution constellation at the at a resolution of 30, 50 centimeters with very frequent observations, radar, optical, infrared, in order to make sure that Europe knows what happens around the world, not only for climate management point of view, but also for security and defense. And this is something that we are putting forward to the ministerial conference at the end of the year. Also, we are working very closely to incentivize private funding. I had the pleasure also just to meet the CNES colleague and see the CNES Connector program, which is very similar to what we also do at European level, at ESA level, to attract funding from funding entities, venture capital companies or other companies, I see here CNES. And this is something that is absolutely essential because we have to help, first of all, through developing technology to build up and mature technology. We have to help by building programs and projects in place where you can participate and therefore bid, but also we have to help you finding funding entities, that means investors, through this network. Today we have more than 70 venture capital companies as part of this ESA investors network. Last year, about 1.5 billion private money came into Europe. This is a huge increase compared to the past. Today, the European share of private funding is 22% compared to the global share, which is actually quite remarkable. 5 years ago, this was 3%. 3%, and we went from 3% to 22% in only 5 years. And again, thanks to the good work that is done also by our teams to make sure that we get access to this funding. So it's certainly clear that we would like to, through the transformation process, also at this ministerial, to have proposals where we make sure that we are faster, that we are innovative, that we increase speed, that we increase cost efficiency, that we also increase private funding into the space sector, because this ultimately is what we want to achieve. Let me also maybe mention a few things that are very particular for France as a country and the ecosystem in which we are working, also in the commercialization business. What we have seen here is that France in the last few years has really achieved a lot. One, the legacy space players are being challenged by also SMEs and young companies, and we have seen this happening from Thales to Airbus to many others, but also with new ideas, new components, and new ways of working. But also the companies themselves have changed and created startups or invested in startups. Thales Alenia Space is investing in startups, is operating now a space business catalyst program to support these startups. Safran has acquired Preligent, which is a French Earth Observation AI company. Airbus is investing in, has invested very early in OneWeb, one of the first constellations that have been built up, again, where large companies really invest in this new space domain. And this is something that, of course, we foster and we support. But also, France has a very dynamic new space ecosystem. More than 50 startups, scale-ups, and SMEs, 2,500 employees, about 10% of the French space workforce, as I've just learned before on the stand outside. 350 million were raised in France last year of private capital in 2024. And 15 new factories have been established, which really shows that industrialization is taking shape and is taking off. But also on the ESA side, as I mentioned, we're having a very active and dynamic set of activities. We have the ESA Big Network, which just became 20 years old, which has incubated 250 startups in France, in the French ESA Big centers. And many of the companies of you have probably gone through one of the ESA Big centers. We have more than 50 studies and 50 projects carried out in the frame of the BUS program in a decade and about allocating about 30 million euros in order to help those companies to grow. And we have both programs that will be reinforced in CIMIN25 through a new activity called Access. So really this is, there's a lot happening. New space is certainly at the core of it and something that I see as a very important driver also for the ministerial. If I can have a last word on preparing the ministerial. We're in the midst of preparing it. We have a lot of very ambitious programs, but I do need a strong France. I need a very strong French industry, big and small, and I would kindly ask you to help us that our ministerial at the end of the year is successful. Help us with ideas, help us lobbying, talk to people you need that need to be heard, because the decision time is happening right now across Europe, and I have to say, there's a lot at stake, but our program is very attractive, and I count on you for the support, but then of course also once we get the funding in helping us implementing all these programs. Thank you so much.